Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV. Still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but it can only be a debate if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. You call us on 44208-601-4555. We'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or I'll have to move swiftly on, or you can SMS the show on 4478-00-8066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. And we're joined this week at this time, as always, by the listeners of Colourful Radio, based in London, but spreading its colour throughout the land and beyond. And listeners on Colourful Radio should note that the above-mentioned telephone numbers, etc., are for this show only. Tonight we're looking at two big issues, one of which could theoretically actually bring about the end of the whole world, and that is the possibility of a military confrontation between the United States and the People's Republic of China. The United States, President Obama, having suffered a humiliating setback in his long policy of war against the people of Syria and Iran, war by other means, of course, in the latter case, war by sanction and so on. Now that the United States government has had to take an important step backwards in that theater, they have switched their attention to other theaters. On the front line, in Kiev, in the Ukraine, United States politicians, John McCain and many others, are standing there poking a stick in the eye of the Russian bear. In the South China Sea, it's poking a stick at the tiger to see if it's awake. Well, I think China is very much awake. The problem or proximate cause of this confrontation is China's absolutely normal, every country in the world has one, China's imposition of a zone in which if you're flying or sailing into that zone, you must inform China who you are and what your business is. There's no prohibition on flying in that zone, no prohibition on sailing in that zone. But the Chinese authorities want to know who is flying in that zone and who is sailing in that zone. The United States would demand no less, of course, for any Chinese naval assets that were sailing rather too close to San Francisco. Indeed, can you just imagine if the Red Navy, the Chinese People's Republic Navy, was steaming off the coast at San Francisco or down the Pacific coast of the United States? Well, we'd probably already be at war. But the United States Navy is in the South China Sea. Note to President Obama, the clue is in the name, South China Sea. And airplanes from the US Air Force are constantly flying over this Chinese zone where they're causing a very great deal of anger amongst the Chinese people and inevitably the Chinese government. So, given that China is the second most powerful country in the world, and very soon will be the most powerful country in the world, given that China has the second biggest armed force in the world, given that China holds more US dollars than the US Treasury holds, what can this conceivably all be about? Is it face-saving for the United States, diverting people's attention from the Middle East where their policies have proved absolutely disastrous? Or does it presage an actual confrontation between China and the US? We'll be asking that question throughout the show. And the other question we are asking is about the extremist fanatics who have been fighting this 3 years past against the Syrian state, who have caused, as a result of their jihad, as they call it, though jihad can be quite an honourable thing, they have brought the name into disrepute. They have caused the deaths of well over 100,000 people. Those 100,000 include large numbers who have been targeted for death and mutilation before and after death, purely because they belong to a religion or a sect of a religion that these extremist fanatics disapprove of. Their own extremely narrow interpretation of Islam, of course, excludes the vast majority of Muslims, the vast majority of Sunni Muslims. And most of the people who have died in the war are Sunni Muslims. It can't be said too often, this point. Most of the soldiers in the Syrian Arab army are Sunni Muslims. The wife of the president of Syria is a Sunni Muslim. Most of the people in the government of Syria are Sunni Muslims. The idea that this is a confrontation between Sunni Islam and Shia Islam is quite untrue. And of course, the Christian minority has been suffering terribly at the hands of these barbaric terrorist killers. Their holy places have been sacrilegiously attacked and sacked and ruined. Their nuns have been kidnapped. Priests and even bishops have been kidnapped, and priests have been executed. And I don't want to, before the watershed hour, go into too much detail about how these people were executed. Just suffice to say that nobody would want their children to see it. So we'll be asking, is this all losing momentum? Because on the battlefield, the tide has very definitely turned. Very large numbers of these extremist fanatics are now being killed and captured. And some of them are, of course, foreigners, like the ones that Sky News was showing us just the other night, a brigade of British fanatic terrorists. I wonder what will happen when those fanatic terrorists return to Britain. Will they be involved in the kind of hideous crime that was dealt with in the London courts today, where two men were found guilty unanimously by the jury of attempting to behead a young English soldier in broad daylight on the streets of South London in front of hundreds of women and children? The people who are in the British Brigade, as they call themselves, Kitab Britanni, in this army of sectarian fanatics, are going to come home someday, unless, of course, they are killed on the battlefield. They will one day return home to Britain. And then we'll see, in all its ugliness, just how insane the policy of the British government in helping to build this fanatic army up in the first place really was. Let's take the first call of the night. It's from one of the best callers we ever have, Robert in Scotland on China. Robert, welcome to the show, son. Go ahead.
Good evening once again, George.
And to you. Go ahead, son.
Well, I personally think that the US is trying to provoke a reaction from the People's Republic of China. As you said, imagine China sending its warships to the Pacific coast. There would be massive international outcry.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, the American government gets off with almost every single crime they commit, whether it be violating Pakistan's sovereignty with its terrorist drones or slaughtering 1 million Iraqis, because they practically run the United Nations as they run the League of Nations. If they didn't, the Palestinians would have a state which they could officially call their own, and Benjamin Netanyahu, Tony Blair and George Bush would be rotting in The Hague, hopefully with each other to drive each other mad, even if they were before. And because China has stood up to America, America is trying to maintain its status as a global constabulary. But those days are long over, and the American government know it. I hope one day that the rest of the world will stand up to the bullying of the American government.
Robert in Scotland, 14 years young. Such wisdom from the mouths of babes. Thank you for that call, Robert. Let me make this point to you and everyone else watching. If China sailed its navy as close to the Pacific coast of the United States as the United States has sailed its navy to China, we would be on the brink of war right now. If the Chinese Air Force was flying as close to the United States of America as the US Air Force is flying to China, we'd be on the verge of war. If President Putin was on the streets of Toronto on demonstrations, whipping up anti-American feeling in the way that leading American politicians are on the streets of Kiev in the Ukraine, whipping up feeling against Russia, we'd be on the verge of war already. Double standards? You ain't seen nothing yet. Walters is in Norway. He wants to talk about Syria. Walters, welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, George, and thank you for the opportunity.
Welcome.
But before I want to start, I would like to invite our viewers to read a document that was written by Huntington in 1993 in American
by who?
Foreign Policy.
By who?
And Huntington.
Okay,
Huntington,
yes.
In the, yes. And the title of that document was A Clash of Civilization.
Yes.
What's the question? If you read that document, what he said and the strategy that he gave for the Western nations to continue their domination in the world, it's a true picture of what is happening in the world today. And then coming to Syria, Syria is an interesting picture as we all see it. It has been unfolding for many years now. What I would like to start with is that those who were propping up and financing the war in Syria thought that it was going to be something for 1, 2, 3 days. That has not happened. And now we see those people coming up and telling the world that we have decided to suspend non-lethal aid to the rebels because of this and that. And then we also find rebel leaders like Abu Mohammed al-Julani discrediting the FSA and refusing to acknowledge it, terming it a Western architecture. So we see that the rebels have already, I say that they have already lost the war, because when you see the extrajudicial killings and the atrocities, they are just trying to gain something which is out of what they came to do. And those who were supporting them, when I look at Turkey, I ask, where is Turkey today? The Turkish prime minister used to stand up and talk with a very loud voice describing the atrocities of the Syrian army. Where is Turkey today?
Everything silent. Well, Turkey is silent, Walters.
And the rest of
Turkey is silent and has closed its border. And the FSA is no more because all of its guns have been taken by Al-Qaeda. So much looting of their warehouses was done that they were literally left with not a single gun or bullet. And as a result, as you say, Britain and the United States have both suspended non-lethal military aid to the Free Syrian Army, so-called. The leader of the Syrian Free SA, the Syrian leader of the FSA, has fled to Qatar. He's no longer safe, either in Syria or in Turkey. So there's a state of total collapse of the so-called moderate opposition in Syria. Of course, none of it really counts as an opposition, because the leadership of it are all hirelings of various foreign countries, as al-Julani revealed in his press conference the other day. Puppets of one foreign country or another, and no longer capable of claiming even that they represent anything significant. Which is not to say that there are not supporters of political opposition to the system in Syria. There are many, many Syrians who want important, profound change in Syria. And somehow, they're going to have to be organized so that they can take the chair at Geneva in just a week or two's time in order to actually meaningfully negotiate a transition in Syria. One thing's for sure, the people that the West have been backing openly are no more. They've lost all their guns, they've lost all their credibility, they are literally on the run. That only leaves Al-Qaeda, and nobody is going to negotiate with Al-Qaeda. Ramzan is in Wales, same subject, Syria. Ramzan, welcome to the show, sir. Go ahead.
Hello, George.
Yes, hello, sir.
Assalamu alaikum to you.
Wa alaikum salam.
Good, good. Well, these so-called rebels, freedom fighters, they are not actually freedom fighters. They are terrorists, supported by the terrorist governments of Saudi Arabia and Qatar. They are pumping so much money, and inshallah, the victory will be of the people of Syria, right? And they can spend so much money, much money as they want to the Saudi government, that, the true saying is, inshallah, the truth always is revealed. The truth is always the winner, right? And they are not there to free the Syrian people. The Syrian people were already free, right, to a certain extent. Okay? I mean, in Britain, we are living in a democracy, but we can't say everything what we want to say about the government, right? Otherwise, we will get arrested. So there was freedom when I went in there in 84, and it was lovely, you know? I mean, it's a nice place to go and visit and go to do the Zarat, and inshallah, it's a very, very peaceful people, the Syrian people are. But these people are coming from prisons, from Afghanistan, from Pakistan. They want to dominate their way of religion, which is nowhere according to the Islamic Ummah.
Well, no, it is not. And it's definitely not the way that Syrian people are prepared to live their lives. And I think this is a point that has been underestimated throughout this conflict, Ramzan. The Syrians are not Saudis, and they're definitely not Afghans. They have a culture, a Levantine, Mediterranean culture of coexistence between different religions and between different parts of different religions. And they are not going to accept Al-Qaeda ruling them in Syria. That's why people are flocking to join the Syrian army, even women in large numbers, which is unusual in Arab countries and Arab culture. People are flocking to join the Syrian army, not because they necessarily love Bashar, not because they love the Ba'ath Party. I'm sure that many of them do not love the Ba'ath Party. But the defense of Syria, its existence, its cohesion, its sovereignty, its integrity, these are the things that people are fighting for. And they are winning the war. And everyone with eyes to see can see it. Ramzan, thanks. Eric is in Germany. We'll get more clarity, I think, from him. He wants to talk about Syria. Eric, welcome.
Good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening, as always. Go ahead.
Yes. I would like to say one thing, and that's I'm watching your program via internet.
Uh-huh.
Why I'm mentioning this, because they have shut down Press TV in all Europe and almost in all over the world. And why I'm saying this is because I read in the news a European delegation is in Iran to complain about human rights and freedom of expression, and they give Sakharov prize to some people there.
Yeah.
I would like to ask Frau Merkel, the Chancellorin in Germany, please do something about my freedom of expression in Germany and hand over my complaint to the European parliamentarians in Tehran that I cannot watch your program. Now, going to Syria, or for that matter, China, Mr. Galloway, to my humble opinion, these are only two spots, one is strategy. The strategy for Syria or China or Russia, look at Ukraine, what is going on, is one thing. Create chaos and weaken your adversary. In Syria, these people who are there, they know very well they cannot do anything against the will of the people. And they are not jihadists. Mr. Galloway, they are not even terrorists. A terrorist has some ideology. They are petrodollar mercenaries. I would like to say something directly to these people, to those British or non-British who went over there to make jihad. That's what you would like to have. That's not jihad. I'm asking you folks, why don't you go to Palestine? Didn't you ask yourself, you jihadist, Didn't you ask yourself, those who sent you with charter flights to Turkey, those who provide you with passports, those who provide you with weapons, why those people didn't send you to Egypt when an Islamic Sunni elected, freely democratically elected government was toppled and you weren't there, but your friends are supporting the coup d'etat in Egypt? Why they didn't send you to Gaza? Is the plight of the Muslims, Sunni Muslims in Gaza, not that bad as in Syria? Why didn't they send you to Saudi Arabia, to Bahrain, in Saudi Arabia where the king dances the sword dance with the infidel Bush, who killed millions of Iraqis and Afghans and in Pakistan and so on?
Well, look, I'm going to draw a line there, a line in the sand with a sword, only because I want to get one more call in, Eric, before the break. But that was a very powerful call indeed. Definitely your best one yet. Abdulaziz is in the UK, wants to talk about Syria. Abdulaziz, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Garawi.
Hello, good evening.
Hello. Sir, there is no doubt that these Syrian militants lose their mountain because they resemble the herd of sheep. Don't know where it's going. European countries, which provide them with weapons to kill innocent people in Syria, are the first to bear full responsibility against them. Not just Edmund, the street should go. The European street should go out, not just to do a demonstration, but they should do a revolution, because they take the full responsibility of these massacres.
Well, of course, we could allocate blame in all of this. There are many different issues here. There's the issue of the need for a transition to democracy in Syria. On that, I am absolutely clear. Not everyone watching will be. But I support the right of the Syrian people to freely choose their own government. There's the Persian Gulf countries whose money is being used to fuel this murderous invasion by mercenaries and fanatics and extremists from all over the world. There's the British and American and French governments who are providing the trainers, the intelligence, and the non-lethal military aid to these fanatic extremists. And then there's Israel, which is laughing all the way to the political bank. We'll continue this discussion, God willing, after the news in 3 minutes' time. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're asking tonight, is the US deliberately provoking a response from China? Is it poking a tiger in the eye to see if it's awake? And is it awake? And what are the potential earth-shattering, literally earth-shattering possibilities if the current confrontation in and above the South China Sea were to escalate? And we're asking, are the Syrian terrorist fanatics losing their momentum in the war in Syria? Large numbers of these extremists are being killed, being hunted down. Some are leaving back for their own countries or other places where they would like to have the same kind of murder and mayhem, and some of them are beginning to realize that this game is up. The leader of the so-called Free Syrian Army, for example, who has run away to Qatar, just about as far away from Syria as it's possible to be. But where the carpets are deep, the upholstery luxurious, and I understand he'll be well looked after, at least until it becomes politic for the rulers in Qatar to send him on his way. And then where, we don't know. Here's Bakir in Denmark on the line on Syria. Bakir, welcome.
Good evening, George. And I would like to...
Bakir, you're on the air.
Yeah, I would like to thank you all for what you do for us, George, here in the West. And also, I would like to give credit to the Syrian Arab Army for the Takfiri fanatics in the so-called revolution, as they call it. But the funny thing is, George, Saudi Arabia is now saying they will act alone. And it seems like they are now realizing it, that the Syrian revolution, as they call it, has finally been a lost cause for them.
Well, Saudi Arabia will not act alone for long.
No.
The dog can never wag the tail, you see. And the United States has made a strategic decision in the region vis-a-vis Iran and vis-a-vis Syria. And Israel is in the same position, actually. We have this unholiest of alliance of the fanatic supporting and funding state of the Saudi Arabia and the Zionist settler state in Israel. Both of them are clients of the United States. Both of them are barking at the United States their defiance. But in the end, both are just the tail of the American dog, and the tail never wags the dog. Bakir, thanks for that call in Denmark. Let's go to Gary in Canada on the same subject. Gary, welcome back, my friend.
Good day, George. How are you?
By the grace of God, good. Go ahead, sir.
Unfortunately, Robert, bright young fellow that he is, stole quite a bit of my thunder.
And he's only 14, Gary. He stole quite a bit of my thunder. We have to wake up to the fact that the Roberts of this world are coming to take the torch from our hands and carry it on.
Absolutely. So I'm going to focus for these few minutes more on the question of China.
Yeah, go ahead.
The issue with China is that if anyone is in any doubt about the cloud cuckoo land that U.S. imperialism now proposes to inhabit, here we have the most extreme example. The notion that the United States can militarily subjugate the People's Republic of China is to put it in a word, insane.
Yes.
The people forget the history. The history was that China was divided up among all these European powers who really, they didn't really control territory in the interior. They controlled the ports of China.
Yep.
And the British led the game, of course, and secured it with the Opium Wars and everything that followed from that. But the whole point about the U.S. and China is that the U.S. came into the Chinese question after the Europeans had divided everything up and were about to go to war again over what further to divide up. And the Americans presented themselves to the Chinese. This was at the time of the Boxer Rebellions around 1900. They presented themselves as the great Democrats, as the people who aren't ruled by monarchs, as the people who are for freedom and justice and all these things. And they conned a lot of people. But in the end, China became unified by the anti-imperialist struggle against the Japanese invasion and by the final struggle right after the end of World War II, after the defeat of Japan, to finally wrest control from any other foreign influence and have China stand up, as Mao Zedong put it. He said, China has stood up.
Yep.
The Americans then went running around trying to find out who lost China. And they had this whole phony debate about who lost China. The point is, China was never there for the U.S. to have. And this is a very fundamental point that people seem to forget. They seem to think, U.S. can just hop here and hop there and hop and wherever it likes, because it has this global military projection, and therefore it will have its way. It's incredible the things that the U.S. is doing. On you raised earlier in the program, what would be the reaction if China's ships cruise near the U.S. West Coast?
Yeah,
I can tell you what the reaction is already of the U.S. to China shipping oil from the Middle East through the Suez Canal and the Mediterranean and across the Atlantic and India and Pacific. Their reaction has been to set up interdiction on the high seas. This is happening right now. This is illegal under international law. It's a cause for war. They board ships and they say, how much cargo do you have? Where are you going? And all this. This is what the U.S. is already doing today and has been doing this since about 2005.
And well, I'll tell you what, Gary. Deng Xiaoping said to Prince Charles, when Prince Charles gently chided China on some issue of domestic law inside China in the district of Hong Kong, Deng Xiaoping said to His Highness, the days when China could be ordered what to do by foreign countries is over. And this is something that is little understood so far in the West. But we're about to turn another page. We're about to turn a page in which nothing will happen in the world unless China agrees with it happening. And that's
exactly
a shock that the West is going to have to get used to. Gary, thanks for the call. I must go to Iran. Mohammed is in Qazvin in Iran, wants to talk about Syria. Mohammed, welcome.
How are you?
Yes, by the grace of God, good. Go ahead, sir.
Syria.
Go ahead.
You know, all the persons who have talked about Impress TV, they are agreed in one common thing, that the persons that are fighting in Syria, they are nothing more than vile peoples that have trained in other foreign countries to kill innocent Muslims. Even in other Press TV programs, all the people that have participated in the comments in Facebook, Twitter, email, text, talking, they are talking about that they are killing innocent people just for nothing, just for the price of the oil goes up and they get more money. If they are jihadists, they tell that we are jihadists, we are terrorists. Even in other places like Gaza, they are fighting against the innocent Muslims. They don't care that this is Shia, this is Sunni. They want to kill other people. That shows that they are anti-Muslims, not anti-Shia or anti-Sunni.
And well, there's no doubt that the majority of people that they've killed are Sunnis, including high Sunni religious personages. I mean, the Mufti in Aleppo had his head severed and put on a spike on top of his mosque, the central mosque in Aleppo. This after his body had been dragged down the road from a car until he was dead. So there's nothing religious or Muslim about this kind of conduct. But I just want to make one point. Honesty requires it. There are Syrians in the opposition to the government in Damascus. And it's important to acknowledge that the government in Damascus has to have somebody to negotiate with. And that has to be the Syrians who are in opposition to the government in Damascus. But as I've been saying here for years, and as Jane's Defense Weekly, the Bible of the military industrial complex, as the New York Times, and as many other anti-hostile to Syria sources of information are now making clear, something between 60 and 85% of all those fighting and killing in Syria are foreign elements and or Al-Qaeda. Now, the world has to make a choice here. Do you really want this Frankenstein monster called Al-Qaeda to rule in Syria. The Syrian people, by defending their state and opposing these people, have made it clear where they stand. It's vital that the rest of the world asserts itself on where it stands. Mohammed, thanks for the call. I'm staying in your region, though. I'm going to talk next door to Iraq. Hamid is on the line to talk about China. Hamid, welcome. Yeah. Hamid, yes, welcome.
Thank you. That I would like to say that the trouble between the tension in China, see, there will be no trouble at all, because all American trouble is related, connected to Israel, and there is no Israel in China Sea. And the last time I asked you why the Saudi supporting the Zionists, you told me it's based on economy. No, I don't agree with you. What I believe based on religious. And my comment that the Sephardim of Kingdom of Saudi will never stop arming the terrorists in Syria until Hezbollah leadership creating the Saudi Zionists with war in Israel. Then the Saudi Zionists seriously will stop arming the terrorists. Otherwise, the war in Syria will continue and supporting war. But that's the only way to stop the war in Syria. And thank you.
I didn't really understand very much of that. I don't know if the viewers at home were able to hear the audio better than me. But let me pick up what I think Hamid was saying. He was making a common mistake amongst many in imagining that the United States really cares about the Middle East, or even really cares about Israel. It doesn't. It doesn't love Israel. It has interests in Israel and with Israel. Its main interest with Israel is keeping the Arab and Muslim world divided and weak, the better to steal their things. But the United States is no longer as dependent on the things that are to be found in your country, Iraq, and many other countries in the region. The United States is actually moving in the direction of energy self-sufficiency, albeit developing forms of gas and fracking and so on that are deeply damaging to the environment. Most American oil comes from Venezuela, not from Iraq or Saudi Arabia. America, however, is gravely threatened in its hegemony in the world by the rise and rise of China. So Hamid says there will be no confrontation between America and China because there is no Israel in China. Well, I'm sorry, that's just nonsense. It's just political, geographical, geopolitical illiteracy. The second point he was making was to equate the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah, the only Arab army ever to defeat the Zionist settler state on the battlefield, with these ragbag foreign British, Pakistani, Libyan, Chechenian, Saudi, they're sweeping the death cells in Saudi Arabia, giving reprieves to people facing execution for ghastly crimes if they'll only go and fight and kill in Syria. The idea that Hezbollah can be compared to this ragbag of murdering, throat-cutting, heart-eating, fanatic extremists is deeply repugnant to me. And Hamid, you are not seeing the wood for the trees. I ask you, as an Iraqi, to take these sectarian blinkers off of your face, because whilst your sight is being channeled down these blinkers, everything for the whole Muslim Ummah is going down the drain. Please, wake up, smell the coffee. Now let's talk to Mehdi in London on Syria. Mehdi, welcome. Mehdi, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hello, sir. Well, I'd like to talk about Syria.
Yeah.
You know what? The United Nations is, I feel, is so, you know, we have to do something about United Nations in about Syria. So they act so dirty and it's very obvious to see. And I haven't seen anyone, you know, just go, I mean, to write a letter or anything against United Nations, because what the United Nations is doing, actually helping these things carry on and carry on. And then Mr. Ban Ki-moon, that guy hasn't got no shame at all. He comes out and he just talk about the figure of people being, you know, homeless and no food, these kind of things, you know? And whose fault that is? Even in our TV news, BBC, so on, they talk about people are homeless. I mean, who caused that?
Well, that's right. The Syrian refugees, in huge numbers now, in millions, are in a very desperate situation. They should never have been driven out of their country by the war, supported by the Western powers and their Persian Gulf satrapies who are paying for it all. They should never have been driven from their homes by fighting generated by these foreign extremists who have invaded their country. But now that they are refugees, it's vital that somebody helps them. Now, the first people who should be helping them are the Arabs, especially those Arab countries that are pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into the war. Why can't they spare some of the hundreds of millions of dollars they're pouring into the war for some of the Syrian victims of the war? After all, if they're so concerned about the plight of the Syrian people, what about the Syrian people you can easily help who are living in tents in this bitter winter with too little to eat, whose women are being feasted on, are being stalked and falsely married on fake promises? What about the Syrians who are having to beg on the streets of neighboring countries? Why don't you help them? As you have so much money to spend for Syria, why don't you spend it on the refugees, defenseless, helpless refugees, the women and children of Syria? Why don't you spend it on them instead of on weapons to kill more Syrians and make even more Syrian refugees? Let's go to Nigeria and talk to Muhammad on China. Muhammad, welcome.
Oh.
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Galloway. Thank you very much.
Go ahead, sir.
I'm very happy for making my contribution this time around, because I have been trying to make my contribution almost every week, but unfortunately, it is only today I'm able to succeed.
Well, by the grace of God, yes. We're talking with you now. Go ahead, Muhammad.
I would like to first of all begin by reminding you here, we are watching you here in Nigeria, and we are really enjoying your programs, especially your show, Mr. Galloway.
Thank you so much, Muhammad. I must make it to Nigeria sometime. There was someone trying to organize it, but it fell through.
Thank you. I do salute you. You are doing a nice job.
Thank you.
My contribution today will be a special prayer to some countries in the world, starting with the Syria. May the government of the Syria and its army be capable of defeating all these militias, including all these terrorists trying to fight and destabilize the country. May the government of China become as strong as capable of defeating these American warships and war machines there. May that China Sea become a great yard for the American soldiers.
Let's hope there are no more graveyards. But I'll tell you this, Muhammad, and I mean to the rest of what you said, anybody who thinks they can fight China is insane. China is 1.4 billion people, one state, cohesive, increasingly economically powerful, and with the military wherewithal, and above all, the will to repel all borders. So anyone who thinks that China is going to be intimidated by this fading paper tiger called the United States Empire is making a very, very serious mistake. Mohammed in Nigeria, thanks for the call. Let's go to Marwan in occupied Palestine, talking about Syria. Brother Marwan, welcome to the show, sir.
Hello, George. How are you?
By the grace of God, good.
George, hello?
Yes, go ahead, Marwan, yes.
Yes, yes. Hi, George. I just want to say this is so funny because a lot of people talk about Sunnis and Shias, and I'm a Sunni. I'm a Sunni, and I have no idea what... There are differences between Sunnis and Shias, but they don't have... They have nothing to do with politics or occupied Palestine or any difference whatsoever regarding any problems in the Middle East. I mean, the Sunnis and Shias, it's something that was created to divide the Arab unity and the Muslim unity into one cause. That's it. I think it is... It's a game played by so many people, especially the West, to divide the Arab unity.
Well, this Marwan...
Is, first of all. Second of all, I want to say...
Marwan, there are different interpretations of Islam, but there is one God, there is one Quran, there is one Muslim Ummah, which will have its own interpretations of Islam, but which surely has more in common with each other than with those who are against all of the Muslims, those who are against all of Islam, those who hate Islam, ridicule Islam, kill the Muslims, occupy their lands, steal their wealth, keep them divided and weak. If the Muslims could come together, they could change that whole picture. That's what I'm working for, Marwan. And may we one day walk together in a free Palestine.
Hello, if you just comment your name and location, you left my number. And just make sure that your television volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You can directly put through this phone number and then we'll be back.
Comment. Can I have your telephone number?